Chapter 7, Mindsets for Seeing Opportunity, The Growth Mindset. Dr. Carol Dweck says that some people believe that the world and everything in it is relatively fixed or set. For example, they would consider their life situation and intelligence level to be fixed, and they would invest time and energy to verify or document their level of intelligence rather than investing time to increase it. These people have what Dweck would call a fixed mindset. Some people, on the other hand, believe that the world and everything in it is changing and evolving. They believe that they can change themselves and their situations. They would consider their intelligence level to be flexible and modifiable, and would invest time and energy working to develop their level of intelligence rather than investing time to verify or establish it. These people have what Dweck would call a growth mindset. If you fundamentally believe that things are fixed in place and that there's no use trying to change yourself or your situation, it's going to be much harder to find and create opportunity for yourself and those you care about. Opportunity requires you to believe it before you see it, in a certain sense. You must move through the world with a faith that opportunity is going to be there for you. This thinking requires you to believe that people change and evolve, and that circumstances change and evolve. If you find yourself feeling stuck in life, ask yourself if one of the root causes is a sense that things don't change, people don't change, and situations don't change. If you can see this pattern in how you perceive reality and how you think about your life, then start studying the sciences of change and evolution. Evolutionary biology and developmental psychology provide powerful models for how bodies and minds evolve through stages of life and provide excellent referential frameworks for looking at other important domains. Look back through your life and remember the moments where you had to grow and change in order to go to the next level. Notice how growth was the key that opened the doorway to your higher potential. If you're already a growth mindset type, then develop your ability to learn and change in domains of your life that you may have overlooked in the past. Often, we will unconsciously have an area of our lives where we believe that things are fixed, maybe health or relationships or happiness or spirituality, and not realize it consciously. Look through your entire life to see how you can grow and evolve. This can represent the potential for huge opportunity personally, interpersonally, or spiritually. Also, as you add the lens of opportunity to your life more consciously, I recommend watching for people who have a growth mindset and adding more of them to your social group and business projects. They will help create a growth mindset culture around you that pulls you even higher, faster. Unique genius. Each of us is born with a different genetic makeup, with a different arrangement and combination of brain centers, into a different family, into a different culture, and we each have different experiences growing up. These all combine and integrate into one personality, one persona, one person. You. The more I study how we are each individually composed of these multidimensional genetic, family, cultural, and experiential elements, the more profound people become to me. We each have dozens or maybe hundreds of different functional centers in the brain. Some of them are for senses, like light or sound. Some of them are for language, both interpreting and communicating. Some are for organization. Some are for memory. Some are for analysis. What's interesting about this is that each of us has a unique combination of different sizes of these areas. One person might have a larger visual center, while another might have a larger language center, and another might have a larger part of the limbic system or emotional center. Each brain is like a custom computer with a unique combination of processor, memory, speed, sensors, communication systems, etc. This is just one of the things that contributes to the amazing diversity of ways of seeing, experiencing, and interacting with reality that we humans demonstrate. I believe that each of us has a unique genius, a way of perceiving and experiencing the world that no one else has. When you combine and layer the genetic influences, family influences, cultural influences, and experiences that we have, it all adds up to a unique way of being in this world. Unfortunately, most of us haven't had someone show up in our lives and say, "You have something that is uniquely special, a way of seeing the world that only you can understand, and a gift that is important and valuable to us all. And we definitely didn't come up through an education system that was built upon this fundamental premise. I don't mean to be negative about the education system. It has given us incredible benefits. But things are changing in dramatic ways right now, and the model of mass assembly line education to prepare people for mass assembly line work is in its final hours. It's exciting to be living in this modern environment because we are waking up to the unique value that each person brings to the world, and we're starting to think differently about how to educate and integrate each of the miraculous people that are born on this planet. As you build yourself into an opportunity discoverer and developer, it's useful to study some of the various personality models. Models like the Myers-Briggs system, the Big Five from evolutionary psychology, the Enneagram system, or the Kolbe model offer insights that are often profound. Some of these are more woo-woo than others, but I've found that each of them brings unique and valuable insights when they are studied and used for self-reflection and interpersonal relationships. As you study different personality models, you start to realize just how unique your personality is, and you start seeing more clearly which aspects of reality are obvious to you that aren't to other people. I walk through the world now assuming that most people can't see most of what I can see. This is a very different stance than I had through most of my life. I used to assume that things that were obvious to me were obvious to almost everyone, and that people who didn't see these obvious things were not trying, or they were being lazy, or worse, that they were stupid. As I have spent more time with diverse people across varied domains of life, and I've learned how to ask the right questions, I found that each of us has a unique genius that is essentially invisible to the person who has it, and usually also to others around them. It's so natively a part of who we are that we don't notice that it's there. In many cases, we've either suppressed or exaggerated our unique genius, and also our shadow or unique blind spot as well, and this complex is what we call our personality, or more typically, me. But if you persist and can get past the superficial levels when getting to know another person, what you'll discover is that they have a way of seeing and understanding a part of reality that is profound and astonishing. They might be an interpersonal genius, like my wife is, who has an almost psychic way of reading social situations and doing or saying what is needed to help a group of friends or family to function better as a unit. Or they might be a logic genius, who can take complex situations apart and break them down into component parts in their minds and instantly see how to make a process more efficient. Or they might be a physical genius, who can look at something and know instantly how to build it at home from scratch. Or they might be a flavor genius, who can taste a dish and know all at once what the ingredients are and how they are prepared in order. Or they might be a musical genius, who can listen to a piece of music and play it note for note on an instrument. Science is a good place to look for examples of this concept. Within the domains and branches of science, you have subdomains and specific areas that become quite fascinating. And then you have people who learn multiple domains and cross-pollinate or hybridize these domains and come up with new things. A key insight for me was realizing that if you're the smartest person in some super niche area of life, that this is the first time in history when you can go out, look around the planet, and at the projects and needs that are emerging, and find the place where your unique genius can be recognized, used, and put to work. Now you can do something that you have absolute passion about and something that also produces a lot of value. If you're not sure what your unique genius is, keep looking. And if you know what it is, continue to keep looking as well. Keep refining, clarifying, and using it in different situations to hone and develop it. This is the zone where you will find more success and fulfillment, and where you can help others and the planet. The critical counterintuitive. When I was in my early 20s, I went to the Lane County Fair in Oregon, where I grew up. There was a carnival game at the fair that you could play to win a huge stuffed animal. I watched as one person after another tried to win the game, but consistently lost toward the end. It involved holding a piece of metal and moving it through the game without touching anything. As soon as it touched something, a buzzer went off and you lost. I watched as the people who were working at the booth would demonstrate how easy it was to win. I watched with my own eyes as they demonstrated the winning move, but one after another, people walking up would lose their money. I stood there looking at the game for hours, fascinated by this dynamic, becoming more and more determined to figure out how to win. After trying it and losing myself, and then observing more, I realized that there was a move you had to make right at the end of the game that was against what people would instinctively do. You had to turn the piece you were holding in one direction in order to win, but the intuitive thing to do was to turn it in the other direction, which would end up losing you the game. Once I realized where the trick was, I started closing my eyes and imagining playing the game and making the correct move at the end. I would watch others play, then close my eyes and imagine playing perfectly. Finally, I tried the real game again and won. I felt like I had conquered an important challenge. It was the counterintuitive move that made the difference. It took mental rehearsal and practice in my imagination before I could actually do it in real life. When I was in my late 20s and studying the dating and mating game, I noticed a pattern when observing men who were naturally good at attracting women. Many of the things that they did were completely outside of what I would even consider doing or saying to a woman. They would tease or joke around with an attractive woman, or even make fun of her within minutes of meeting her. Whereas I was so terrified to talk to a woman that the idea of making a joke seemed inconceivable. Sure enough, when I started being more playful and having more fun when talking to women, it worked like a charm. But again, this is something that I wouldn't have thought of doing in a million years on my own. It was radically counterintuitive. When most people decide to lose weight and get into better shape, the first thing they think of is exercise. They think that they need to start going to the gym in order to lose weight. But when many people try losing weight this way, they are disheartened to see their weight often increasing instead of decreasing. What's going on? After talking with many trainers, bodybuilders, and fitness experts, I've learned that 80% of weight loss is about diet, not exercise, and that when you start exercising, you add muscle, which typically makes you heavier. The body says, things are getting harder, conserve weight. Turns out that if you want to lose weight, it's about what you're eating. Exercise is important to health as well, but the game of losing weight is about what you eat. Very counterintuitive. As I have continued studying success in different domains of life, I've seen this pattern over and over. Whether it's in health, relationships, business, success, spirituality, the pattern goes like this. The next step on the path to success is usually not obvious, and it's typically counterintuitive. This is what I call the critical counterintuitive. It's the counterintuitive move that's critical to success. When you know this, it makes finding those non-obvious next steps in life much easier. As they say, expect the unexpected. When you actually expect the next step towards success to be something that's not intuitive to do, it frees you to try things that are way outside the box, and it gives you permission to be very experimental. In NLP, or neuro-linguistic programming, they say that if what you're doing isn't working to get you closer to your goal, stop and try something else, because anything is likely to work better than something that doesn't work. Opportunity is often hiding behind something that looks like it could never be the way forward and upward. But like a hidden pathway or a secret doorway, we must be willing to experiment with new experiences, new relationships, new ideas, and new combinations of things in order to discover it. Remember that the next step on the path to success is not obvious and typically counterintuitive. How much is too much? Thomas Leonard, the author of the book, The Portable Coach, recommended several strategies for increasing success in life. He said to look at the things in your life that you are tolerating and then to eliminate them to free up mental energy. If you're tolerating a lot of interruptions, set up your life so that you eliminate them. Turn off ringers and alerts and stop answering your phone when it rings, and you'll program people to stop interrupting you, and you won't hear the interruptions in the first place. He also recommended to look at places in your life where you run out of things regularly and have to spend time restocking and to build a reserve of them so you always have extras around. Simple ideas, but very valuable. I have used these strategies to free up a lot of time and attention in my life. Once you free up attention from things that were robbing you, and then you stock up on things that you use regularly, you can move through life in a more efficient and streamlined way. But I've also noticed that many of us are investing our energy in creating a level of reserve that is not productive. In fact, it's maladaptive and ultimately counterproductive. I'm talking about the person who gets into good physical shape, but then has to become a bodybuilder in order to feel good about themselves. Or the person who has to go on a date with a different person every night in order to feel validated. Or the person who achieves financial independence, but then spend the next 20 years trying to become the richest person they know. I read some research that suggested that the more money you have, the more you worry about money. I can be an anecdotal piece of evidence for this myself, as it has certainly been true in my life. The logic to explain this phenomenon goes something like this. The more money you have, the more you have to lose. And we humans don't like to lose things, so we worry more about it when we have it. The more you have of something, the more others will envy you as well. It can be a burden on your social relationships to be the successful one. The notorious B.I.G. said, "Mo' money, mo' problems." I had a friend several years ago who had owned a massive estate earlier in his life. He told me that he had one person on his staff whose only job was to travel around his property and change broken sprinklers. He eventually gave up the big home and big staff, and he moved to a condo in a high-rise building. He said it was much better to not have to worry about managing a big staff and all of the hassles of the estate. I'm not suggesting here that you should stop having big goals or dreaming big dreams, but what I would like to suggest is that we must learn to satisfice instead of to maximize when we are dreaming our dreams and setting our goals. Once you get past a healthy reserve in your life, you have to start adding an extra layer of thinking and management in order to manage that reserve. A bigger part of your mind share goes to worrying about losing it and to managing how others perceive you as well. It's an interesting experience to have. My recommendation is to start looking at opportunities through the lens of building a healthy reserve that you are satisfied with, and then move on to another area of life and build competence and success there. Once you achieve a vibrant level of physical health, then go to work on your relationships. Once you have your relationships in harmony, go to work on your financial life. Once your finances are handled, go to work on building a family. You can do these in any order, but remember to keep building a successful life and not just one area of your life. If you get too top-heavy in a particular domain, you will start to experience the burden of an over-reserve. While some of this is okay, too much is mentally and emotionally debilitating. It's a counterintuitive dynamic to watch for in your life as you pursue opportunities. Strengthen your strength and your weakness. Peter Drucker recommends to build your career and business success on your strengths. I believe that this is the correct approach to business and money success. You want to take what you're good at and then find a way to develop that into a value creation skill set that you can use in the world to produce value, money, assets, and wealth. As you encounter and create opportunities in your life, one of the key questions to ask yourself is, will pursuing this opportunity help strengthen my strength? If it will, then it's a double opportunity. For example, if you've discovered that you're good at sales and you have an opportunity to take a sales role working for a company that you admire, then it's actually an opportunity to not only succeed, but also to grow professionally as well. The opportunity to strengthen your strength is so valuable that you should also consider putting yourself in situations and signing up for experiences that will develop this strength even more, even if you're not paid. My business partner, James, offered to come to work for my company doing sales for 2 months for free when he first started out with me almost 10 years ago. Why? Because he knew that this would be the best place to develop his talents. He became our top salesperson. Fast forward to now, and he has worked his way up to becoming my business partner. Part of the work in identifying your unique genius is to find out what you're great at. It's then up to you to develop your gift or natural talent into a powerful strength that you have used in various situations to produce value. As you move through your life, it's important to notice where you are naturally talented and then to develop those talents by learning from the best and challenging yourself at higher and higher levels. Your strength is likely where your business success will flow from. Just as developing your strength is key to success professionally and in business, developing your shadow or your weakness is key to success in your personal life. Let's say that you are naturally a more rational type, but you are uncomfortable in social situations. By strengthening your thinking ability, you will develop your skills and potential in business. But by strengthening your social skills, you will develop your ability to have better relationships. Many people avoid developing their weaker sides because it is often uncomfortable. But a little bit of progress in your shadow area can have a profound effect on your entire life, often far more than working in the domain where you're naturally talented and comfortable. If you have been neglecting your physical health, your emotional life, your rational side, or not developing your ability to create success, build relationships, or follow your purpose, then it's likely that you feel a big hole in your life in that domain. You might feel shame or self-consciousness or even terror. When you finally take on this domain and find people who can explain it to you and help you grow there, it has the potential to dramatically impact the quality of your entire life. In my life, I always avoided conflict. I didn't have a natural sense for social relationships, and I didn't know what to do if someone got upset in a friendship or work relationship. My wife has taught me that conflict is actually natural in relationships, and that it can be resolved by intentionally confronting it and working with it. This has led to incredible breakthroughs with friends, family, and work situations. By working on weakness, I have so much more confidence with friendships and relationships, and I can relax more when I'm in social situations. Strengthen your strength and your weakness. These are two of your biggest opportunities in life. Thinking, planning, and living in longer time horizons. As you develop in the world of career, business, money, and investing, the time frames that you think in become longer. Robert Kiyosaki points out that we typically go through the following sequence in relationship to business and money. 1, employee. 2, self-employed. 3, business owner. 4, investor. As an employee, your horizon is the work you're doing today and the positive results you're producing in the moment. You could be thinking past today about getting a raise or promotion, or even what your next career move might be, but most of your consciousness is concentrated in the short term. You do your work, and you get a paycheck. If you strike out on your own and become self-employed, or do contract work, you take on new responsibilities and new risks. You now have to learn and focus more on getting paying customers and clients, and you also have to follow up with them in order to get paid. It might take you a month or two to get a client, then a month to do a job, after which you might send an invoice, and then it might take another month before you receive your pay for the work. You have expanded the horizon and business cycle that you are operating within from a couple of weeks to maybe a few months. If you start a business that produces and markets a product or service, your time horizon extends even further. You must invest to create your product, hire people to handle various roles in the business, risk money up front on marketing to generate leads, then follow up with those prospective customers to get them to buy from you, and keep following up to turn them into long-term customers who continue to be profitable. As a business owner, you might start thinking in cycles of 6 to 12 months or longer as you make investments in new projects and then receive the returns much later. If you then take the developmental next step to become an investor, the time horizon stretches out for years. You might invest in a stock and hold it for several years, or buy a piece of real estate and intend to rent it out for a decade. I have investments that I made between 5 and 10 years ago in startups that appear to be doing well, but I won't know until they experience some type of exit whether or not my investment has paid off. These type of time horizons can be scary, as your capital is locked up in an investment that may or may not work out, but you just have to stay with it until you discover what happens. If you have children, the time horizon stretches out for decades and for entire lifespans. An early investment in extra time and attention with your child can pay off spectacularly in terms of a feeling of secure attachment and self-esteem in your child later. I find this expansion of time horizon to be one of the more interesting and challenging aspects of opportunity. As you develop in your life and begin seeing and thinking in longer and longer cycles in different domains and feeling what they are like experientially, you are growing as a human being. Only through experience do you see what the long-term impact can be in saying something hurtful or mean, or doing something that damages your reputation. And only through experience do you see what an incredible difference it can make in the life of another person to take the time to understand them and help them get to the next level of their own development. As you work with this material and you seek out and creatively experiment with opportunities in different life domains, begin thinking in longer time horizons. Observe the longer cycles. Learn to dance with the longer term implications of the decisions that you make. Making a decision today that you won't know the outcome of for years or decades involves a huge sense of responsibility. Most people become very uncomfortable when faced with making a long-term financial decision or making an investment that they won't know the result of for 10 or 20 years. And rightly so. If you haven't learned how to think in timescales of months, years, then decades, you don't develop the models and intuition to guide you when faced with decisions like these. It feels like standing on the edge of a cliff and making the decision to jump off, not knowing whether or not you'll sprout wings and fly on the way down. It can be scary. That's why it's so important to work with the ideas, tools, and models that I've assembled here so that you can start to see bigger patterns as you grow in life and to think and plan in longer and longer timescales and cycles. Practice making predictions about how things will turn out in various domains of life in order to develop this long-term sense. An exercise that I find particularly valuable is to intentionally notice what different lengths of time feel like. Set a timer for 1 hour, then go to work on a project and focus until the timer goes off. When it does, stop and reflect for a minute or two on what 1 hour felt like physically, emotionally, conceptually. Then try it with 2 hours. Start noticing what the time period of 24 hours or one full day feels like. If you have a routine that you do at the same time each day, leave yourself a reminder to take a minute to check in with yourself and notice what it felt like to live in that space of 24 hours. If you do this for several days, you will imprint or map an intuitive sense of what a full day feels like. Continue expanding this to 3 days, a week, 2 weeks, a month, 3 months, and a year. I remember in one of Shad Helmstetter's books, he told the story of seeing his grandfather each year around the holidays, and his grandfather would take him for a walk and snap his fingers and say, "Another year has gone by. It's what you do between the snaps that counts." That always stuck with me, and it's exactly what I'm talking about. Peter Drucker advises that each year you should invest the time to make a plan for that year, and then at the end of the year, invest the time to carefully reflect on your plan to see what you did and didn't accomplish. This type of ritual also helps you develop an experiential intuition around what a year feels like and about what's possible in a year. It also develops your ability to imagine what you can actually accomplish in a year, to make you more productive and effective in the bigger picture. My wife Annie and I go to Burning Man every year. We met there in 2009, and it has been a ritual for us to return annually to experience what we think of as the coolest event on the planet. We orient and organize our entire year around being at Burning Man around the 1st of September. The ritual of going to Reno, Nevada a few days early to acclimate to the time zone and to shop for supplies, and then waking up before dawn the first day to drive into Burning Man gives me a chance to reflect on what another year feels like in my life. The event also offers me the opportunity to unplug from technology and experience new and novel ways of thinking about life, community, and society. I often get my best insights and ideas when I'm at Burning Man, and it has become a sort of defining yearly family ritual. I recently realized that in my life, I have made a major change every 10 years since I was 16. At age 16, I dropped out of high school, got a car and driver's license, and started sleeping at friends' houses much of the time. I went to a local community college and tried to pursue a career as a musician and jewelry maker. At age 26, I moved from Oregon, where I grew up, to San Diego, California, to pursue a career in marketing. Another huge move for me, and a time when I went from making very little money to being able to afford a nice apartment, small but nice, and a nice car. At 36, I started teaching entrepreneurship and marketing full-time and transitioned out of teaching dating advice, which I had done for about 5 years. This was a major shift for me and involved a lot of risk and change. At age 46, I had a huge revelation about my relationship with my wife, and I let go of a lot of anger and resentment that I was holding toward her and settled into my relationship in a more permanent way. After 8 years of being together, it really clicked for me that we were now merged into one entity and that I was never going to be alone or on my own again. This insight about the 10-year cycle in my life was a revelation, and it allowed me to really understand and get a sense of what a period of 10 years feels like. In 2009, I went to my high school 20-year reunion. I dropped out of high school early, but I went to the reunion anyway. It was one of the best times I've had in my life. I had not seen most of the people there in the 20 years, and it was an enlightening experience for the entire weekend. What was particularly interesting was to reflect on what 20 years felt like. Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger are famous for talking about how patient they are as investors. They often say that they will wait years for the right investment opportunity, sometimes sitting on billions of dollars in cash, just waiting for the right opportunity. You really have to believe in yourself and in your ability to find and create long-term opportunity if you're going to approach life this way. Think about it. If you had $1 billion in cash, would you personally spend most of every day reading, studying the market, and looking at potential opportunities until just the right one came along, maybe a year or two down the line before investing? And would you invest with the expectation that you'd hold that investment forever? Who would you have to become in order to do something like this? And what would your life experiences have to be in order to approach things this way, have this level of patience, and then also have the courage to make an investment this big when the right opportunity presents itself? What we're talking about here is a type of self-esteem, a sense of your own knowledge and confidence, and a well-thought-through system for analyzing and selecting opportunities. Character aspects and skills like these are only built through experience and with intention. You have to intend to do it, and then use the days, weeks, months, years, decades to practice, so you can discover and then recognize a great long-term investment when it comes along. Otherwise, you're easy to fool, or too afraid to make a decision and commit, or both. You build this type of self-esteem and develop greater confidence in yourself by playing the game of life in longer and longer timeframes. Reminder, get a summary of this entire book, plus written implementation exercises for every chapter, additional bonus sections, and access to a free class to help you discover your best opportunities by visiting opportunitybonus.com. Mindsets for seeing and increasing opportunity. Some people believe that the world is relatively fixed and that they can do little to change themselves and their circumstances. Some believe that things can be changed, including themselves and their circumstances. Some believe that things can be changed, including themselves and their circumstances. Carol Dweck calls these the fixed mindset and the growth mindset. Each of us is born with a unique combination of personality traits and gifts, and then has a unique set of experiences in life. This gives us a unique perspective on the world. Each of us has a type of unique genius. The next step on the path to success is usually not obvious, and it's typically counterintuitive. Some people believe that they are lucky, and some believe that they are unlucky. This seems to directly affect our success in life, with people who see themselves as being luckier being more successful on average. Strengthen your strength and strengthen your weakness or shadow areas. Each helps you to become successful in a different part of your life. Where do you have a gift and are able to see and understand things that most other people don't? Where have you been very fortunate or lucky in your life? Where have you made a change to yourself which triggered a big change in your circumstances and in the world?